So what illness do you have this week?
What's a rockin' pneumonia and boogie woogie flu?
Oh.
Sounds good to me.
Is it contagious?
Come over, give me a wet kiss. Let's find out.
Ooh, tempting.
I know.
But I'm sleepy.
And I'll probably be sleeping before you get here.
Yeah, that's true. And we got comics to talk about.
We do. Well, let's hit the music.
Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm okay. I can get through this. Hang on a second. Ooh, boy, that sucker flew. Right, now, I'm better.
Now, you've had all kinds of illnesses the past
week. I was going to save it for freaking, but as you know, Corey had to reach into the fill-in bag for last week's episode because after 2 years, everybody in the household catching the C word, including my lovely wife twice, I finally got it. And if you go all the way back, I don't know, did you drop that I had COVID the last time we were, was that the previews podcast?
Yeah, the previews podcast is titled Joe's COVID Preview.
I mean, that's how out of it I was. I had COVID at the time. I had taken a test that came up negative. And what had happened is I went to bed Tuesday and I had one of those headaches. And usually when I have it, it's because, okay, yeah, you've been up over 12 hours and you're pushing it. When I woke up the next day, I felt like crap. You know, I felt run down. I had a cough, as was apparent on the podcast. So right away, Chris is like, well, take a COVID test. I did. Came up negative because that night we took my mom and dad to go see a Saints game, the minor league baseball team in town, because they were playing the Toledo Mud Hens. I think I was geeking on that last podcast we were together. And Thursday, I was just down. I was able to get it together enough to do the podcast, obviously. And Friday, I just called in sick because I just felt bad. And my wife's like, well, take another COVID test. And I'm like, do you have an at-home COVID test, Corey? Have you?
I have a bunch of them because so they were giving them away free, and I work at the group home, so I kind of need to be extra careful about it.
And I figured, you know, I might as well check it. And I swear, you know, usually what I do is I get up. I like to watch the Jason show, local talk show guy, because he's a geek like you and me, Corey. He talks our language. I'll put together my EBAN, and then I go to work. I usually drop it in the mailbox. Well, since I called in sick, I figured, well, I'll do my EBAN. I do the COVID test. I figure I'll walk to the post office, which is, well, the mailbox, which is like 2 blocks away, which is good because, you know, I'm feeling run down. I'm thinking, well, maybe I need some vitamin D. You know, just I've been feeling kind of lethargic ever since the hernia surgery, but this was even worse. And if you've ever done it, if you haven't done it, you know, good for you. But it's one of those spit tests, and it's like a junior chemistry test. I've done them so many times. It's like, okay, put the mixture in, take a swab up the nose, stick it in there, seal it, shake it, 3 drops. And before the first fucking drop hit, that line was already there. And I was like, oh, sweet. Yeah, normally you wait 15 minutes. And if you even get a slight line, you know, you get the one line, that just says, yeah, the test is working. The second line tells you if you have COVID. And it was like there almost instantly the minute the drop hit. And you have to put like three drops in it. So I'm like, oh, shit. So I took the walk anyways because, you know, nobody's around me. Time I came back, I'm like, oh, I got COVID. So I called work and I said, you know what? I got COVID. So because they still give you like 5 days of admin. But they're sneaky bastards because what they do is, that, you know, they get all your information. And the nice thing about it was is that I'm always wearing a mask at work. Mostly because, you know, I caught a killer cold like the week before I went back. And again, took the COVID test a couple times, didn't come up. And as that subsided is when the what we know as COVID was starting to pop up. And then they're like, okay, well, your admin days start on Tuesday. And I was like, well, that's some fuckery right there because, you know, I was off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, which means I only get paid for 2 days and they expect me back on Sunday. I did not go back on Sunday, by the way. I don't even think I went back on Monday. Anyway, no, I did go. Did I? I don't remember. It's all a blur. So, but by the time I went to work, apparently my supervisor, God bless her. What's the word you say when your brain like explodes and your skull splits and flames come out of your head? Apparently she did that onto the manager. So how the hell can you give him five admin day and take three on his RDO? And she said, you're not taking care of your people here. You wonder why nobody wants to work here. Well, there's other reasons, obviously. So I don't know what happened. I told her, you know, I've been at TSA almost 20 years. I don't care how they fuck me anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't care. Mainly because I was still crazy sick. So I think I did. I got to look at the calendar here because this is all blur. It's all up. I mean, you're talking May, June, hernia gone, July gone, COVID. Because I think it was the 11th is or the 12th is when I first got it. So on the 20th, I think I did go back to work on the 18th, which was dumb. I should have stayed home, but I'm like, I'm out of sick time. Or maybe I didn't. I don't recall. All I know is I woke up on the 20th and my eyes looked like somebody punched me. And they hurt. They weren't crusty. And I'm thinking, do I got pink eye? And I'm not quite sure what to do because the last time I had pink eye was like 10 years ago. And the doctors don't even want you in the office if you have pink eye. It's that contagious. So
yeah,
I look it up and apparently there is a 4 to 6% chance that you will have pink eye after catching COVID. They don't know why. They're not going to study it because if you have pink eye, it's not really that serious. You take drops, it clears up. Certainly not as serious as I can't breathe. Let's get you to the hospital. I did call the doctor and they went, did you injure your eye? Did you irritate your eye? Do you have allergies? You want to make sure you're not, eyes are not red because of anything else. I did not have the typical crusty buildup. It was just my eyes were red. They felt dry and it actually hurt to like look at computer screens and it hurt to look at TV, which what the hell am I going to do now? Because that's kind of your plus, you know, what gets you placid. So I emailed Corey on the 21st. He said, I can't do it. What did you put up for fill in?
I would have to look.
And I really didn't care. I just had to cough. I figured I'd get you to talk. I'll go look. But no, I just relaxed. By Sunday, it had cleared up. I went back to work. I had the mask on. Oh, that Thursday, though, I felt just lethargic. I mean, I So all I wanted to do was go to sleep. And I already had was having trouble sleeping because of COVID. Literally up all night. And then at 6 o'clock, I'd fall asleep for 4 hours. And then I'd get up, kind of wander through my day. And I knew if I got to get back to work, I got to get back going. And eventually I got my sleep schedule back. But it, you know, again, the headache right away, the lethargic, I still feel. I got the cough. So if I suddenly mute, I'm gonna, you know, I learned to use my mute so I don't cough. But most of the hard symptoms were gone. Never had any problems breathing. The pink eye cleared up, which was, again, really weird. So that was my fun. Oh, and there's more to it as well, but I'll save that for freaking. How about you, Corey? How are things on your end of the world?
Been very, very busy. Very, very busy. Remember how I said that I have told the group home that I'm not going to work Friday evenings anymore?
Uh-huh.
Boy, are they throwing money at me. They are actually giving me a huge bonus to come in for not three, 2.5 hours
wow.
on Friday, because the office job pressed me into extra service. So I'm working the office job till 7. And I said, well, and then the group home is, we desperately need you Friday night there anyway, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I cannot get there until at least 7:30. Because I've already made another commitment. And they said, we'll take it. We'll give you a bonus. So I will be there from 7:30 to 10 while the clients are all pretty much asleep. So I get to come in and watch Star Trek and get a bonus for it. Cool. The wrestling job has learned how to do that too, by the way.
Oh.
Because Saturday, I'm enjoying my Saturday off. I get a panicked email from Mike Johnson at PWInsider.com. Look, my power has been off. Even though they say it'll come back on, it may not be on. Can you cover the Ring of Honor show? So Saturday night, I'm covering a Ring of Honor show. Then I have to do, you know, I have to type it up. Then I have to do audio. And then I had to work at the group home Sunday at 7 a.m. So I'm just dead. And as I've often said, when you stop at the gas station at 6 a.m. on a Sunday, no one is happy to be there. None of the customers, none of the employees, no one. No one wants to be there at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning. The office job is still crazy busy. They're basically pushing overtime so hard. And they're giving bonuses, too, because they're terrible planning. You know, we had no idea people would leave for other jobs.
You know, TSA's got that same thing going. They call it mandatory overtime. And usually it's like per pay period, which is 2 weeks, but they got tricky this time. Because usually I'll just do them, you know, bang, bang, get it over with. They're like, nope. They're doing 2 3-block weeks that you have to do mandatory overtime. And if you work 8 hours, because usually you go in, it's busy, and you go home, they'll give you $100.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just did it because my wife's in Reno this week, and I had nothing else to do.
Except get sick.
Well, I was going to leave.
You're going to find some new illness.
Yeah, well, I was just going to leave and – since it's my plan was leave at 4 o'clock, visit a couple comic stores and go home. And I was like, you know what? It's not busy. I mean, we got past the busy, but they do need people. Cause you know, if you only got 3 people in the room, it takes like, oh, somebody's got a gun. You got to do that manually. Oh, there's some oversize. We can't fit in the machine. Got to do that manually. Oh, look, we got an alarm. Now I got to wait for my supervisor. And we got regular bags. So if you don't have a lot of people, it gets busy fast. And I was like, whatever. Even the acting, I think he's acting FSD, Federal Security Director. He came by and he was like, how you doing? I said, I'm recovered from my COVID. I'm here to do overtime. I could use the money. He goes, well, you know, if you stay 8 hours, you get $100. I said, yeah, that's fine. I said, I don't mind it. My paycheck will come. It's all good. You know, he knows I've been here 20 years. I compared to how I was at the beginning of TSA, where I was an overtime whore, just give it to me. Now I'm kind of like, I don't want it.
Yeah, there comes a point where it's just I want to enjoy the things I have spent my money on.
Yeah, which is funny because now, like I said, I got 2 days off this week instead of three, and then I'm thinking I should go hit some comic stores or some of these new stores I've been hearing about that I never get a chance to visit. But I didn't. But I'll tell you about that when we get to my eBay section.
So, you know, I'm waiting on Joe to call. And Corey, I got monkeypox.
Oh, God, that would suck.
We're going to start with some sad news, real sad news.
Oh, yeah.
Sid Jacobson, who was a writer and editor of comics, he was the managing editor and editor-in-chief at Harvey Comics. When Harvey Comics kind of shut down in the 80s, Marvel came in, swooped up everybody, including him, to run their line Star Comics, because they felt it was important for there to be kids' comics on the stands. And I'll go into a little more detail about that. Then when Star Comics started to fade, Harvey Comics had a slight comeback. And I think we've talked about that a couple of times. And I think it was 94. They got the license to do Hanna-Barbera stuff. And the only thing they did during that time period that actually made money was the New Kids on the Block comic, which actually paid for all the other stuff that wasn't selling. And then when Harvey shut down for good, he retired and started writing comics such as the 9/11 Report, a graphic adaptation. Anne Frank, the Anne Frank House authorized graphic biography, and other comics like that. He also did one of the, he did a few graphic novels like that. There was the 9/11 Report. There was the After 9/11, America's War on Terror, a graphic biography of Che Guevara. And he is a fascinating, fascinating guy. Before he worked at Harvey, well, while he worked at Harvey Comics back in the 50s and 60s, he also wrote songs. And he wrote songs that became hits, such as Frankie Avalon's A Boy Without a Girl, Earl Grant, At the End of the Rainbow, Dion and the Belmonts, Johnny Mathis. Even though he couldn't read music, he wrote songs that were hits and made him money. He also worked on a lot of the writing the Harvey comics, such as Casper, Richie Rich, Little Dot, Little Lotta. When Harvey started to fade away in 81, 82, Marvel made a play to buy Harvey comics. But Harvey was being passed from, now we would call them venture capital firms, but it was basically investment firms who, we bought this because we think we'll be able to make a lot of money off it. Well, we didn't make any money, so we're going to sell it to these guys. And they think they're going to make a bunch of money off it, but they never started doing comics under all these people. So when he came over to Marvel, he launched Star Comics with books like Royal Roy, Top Dog, Planet Terry, and
Heathcliff
was later, I believe.
I just remember a Heathcliff Top Dog crossover.
Yep, Heathcliff, I believe, was the second wave. But that first wave of Star Comics got them sued.
Shh, you want to get sued?
Wally the Wizard and Royal Roy, the people who owned Harvey Comics at the time, said, wait, that's way too close to what we do. So they got sued. That's why those books went away after a while. It wasn't that they lost the lawsuit. It's just they didn't want to deal with it anymore. So let's see. The first Star comic they did, does Joe know what was the first Star comic?
I want to say Top Dog, just because I found a bunch of them in my collection lately.
It was the Muppets Take Manhattan adaptation.
Oh, and I remember buying it, too.
They also did, let's see here. Let's see, it was Harvey Comics sued Star Comics for copyright infringement, claiming that Royal Roy was a blatant copy of Richie Rich. Title was canceled after six issues due to the similarity. They also did a whole ton of toy tie-in comics. And it's weird that G.I. Joe and Transformers were regular Marvel comics. However, books such as, let's see what they were. Captain Planet, Police Academy, Silverhawks, Defenders of the Earth, Inhumanoids, Droids, and Ewoks were all Star Comics, as were Air Raiders, Alf, Bullwinkle and Rocky, Care Bears. Let's see, Chuck Norris Karate Commandos. Who drew Chuck Norris Karate Commandos, Joe?
I barely remember the Saturday morning show.
It was drawn by Steve Ditko.
Oh, really?
Yep, because at the time, Ditko didn't want to draw heroes with flaws. And he had a contract with Marvel, and that was one of the few books where the heroes were just straight heroes. They didn't have any flaws. Matter of fact, if you go to the Steve Ditko drawn issue of Iron Man during the Iron Man alcoholism story, his fill-in has a sequence where Tony Stark is dreaming about being drunk in the Iron Man suit. That whole sequence was drawn by Marie Severin because Ditko refused to draw it. Let's see. They also had the Flintstones. They had Fraggle Rock, Heathcliff, the Hug-a-Bunch, Madballs. They actually had Masters of the Universe. DC's the one who started it, and then they had it. Let's see. Silverhawks, Strawberry Shortcake, Thundercats, Visionaries. Jacobson wrote a lot of that stuff, too. He and Ernie Colon had worked together since the 60s on Richie Rich and Casper. And then he brought the whole crew over, and they worked on Star Comics till they either retired or went back to Harvey. He passed away last week. Lot of people talking about how great it was to work with him with Star Comics. A lot of the Marvel office people said he was just fantastic to work with, real easygoing, real good with making sure talent got everything they needed. The Star Comics crew he brought in from Harvey were all exceptionally professional. They always got stuff in early. Never had anything, you know, never had stuff for the office team to do to fix artwork or anything. And then he's one of those guys that you look all over the internet, even though he was an editor in chief for years, nobody has a bad thing to say about him, which if you're a boss and nobody has a bad thing to say about you, that says a lot about you as a person. So he passed away last week. And Joe, I wanted to ask you, what are your memories of Harvey Comics? Do you remember as reading them as a kid? I know that you made a joke earlier today about reading them now, but were you a Harvey Comics kid?
I did not seek out Harvey Comics. And again, my cutoff is always what I call it BC, before collecting. Before collecting, I liked Richie Rich. I tolerated Little Dot. I didn't like Little Lotta. I think, is that her name?
Yep.
And they did they do Casper? And
yes,
and
they did. I thought you would be a Casper guy because Casper was tied in with the Cub Scouts.
No, I mean, these were comics. If they were around, I'd pick them up. Richie Rich was probably my top. Hot Stuff, same thing. Wendy. Again, if they were there, I read them. I wouldn't go out of my way to pick them up. And after BC, after I started collecting comics, didn't really see them a lot in stores. Most of the time I'd find them sometimes in grocery stores, mostly at friends' houses. Sometimes if I went to like Goodwill, they might have a bundle of them and I'd pick them up to read, but I didn't hang on to them.
Now, I was a Harvey kid. When I was in the Cub Scouts, of course, every one of my mom's friends would pick me up the Casper Cub Scout comics. But I preferred Richie Rich. I thought Richie Rich was pretty cool. And even with Richie Rich, it was one of his side characters I liked the best, and that was Jackie Jokers, who was a kid who was a stand-up comic. And as a kid, I was like, oh, man, that's so cool. And when I go back and read him now, it's like, well, they didn't have him telling any jokes. He was just kind of talking about being a comedian, not actually being a comedian. I thought Casper was kind of lame. I loved Little Dot because of all of her weird uncles. That was the thing about Little Dot. Yes, she was obsessed with dots, but one of the storytelling tropes they always used with her is she had, you know, uncles she'd never heard of who had some weird quirk like her, and they would always have a story about that. I never, ever, ever understood the appeal of Hot Stuff. He always seemed like a jerk.
Yeah.
Spooky the Tough Little Ghost, again, seemed like a jerk.
Now, I did like crossovers, because you know I got a softness for those. So if I saw Casper with Richie or Wendy and Casper, things like that, I used to like that. I was always a sucker for a good crossover.
There was one character that they were starting to introduce when Harvey went away. I have done everything I can to find out more about him, but I guess he was just in these little, like, three panel ads they would have, you know, for stuff that's coming. And it would be Richie Rich talking to all his friends. And here's our new friend, Artie Awards. And even now it's like, well, what can his story be? You know, oh, he wins every award that's out there. Who cares? That's not it. That would mean every story is, you know, who's going to win.
Now, see, that's
Richie
funny.
Rich, you knew he would. You knew Richie would win out in the end, but there was some drama as to it. You know, would it be his dad who helped him? Would it be Cadbury? Would he figure it out by himself? Would he and Casper team up to do something? Which, to be honest, as an adult, really weirds me out, because I honestly believe that Casper is Richie Rich's ghost.
I could be, you know, a time travel and all.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember, other than Cadbury being really cool, is Butler. Richie Rich was out, and he was looking for something. I forget what the plot was, but he uncovers this huge gold nugget on their estate. And he's like, that's not what he wanted. He's like, if we weren't rich enough already, he just covered it up. So he wasn't pretentious about being rich. I think that's what he liked about his friends, is that they weren't with Richie because he was rich. They liked him.
Right.
And of course, it was Gloria, you know, gold digger. I mean,
Gloria was like Freckles and Pee Wee. She was just a normal, normal girl. But his Reggie, who was his cousin, was always the one who wanted more. And I always thought it was interesting that Richie Rich is, oh, you know, I'm rich, but, you know, it's no big deal. Whereas, you know, in reality, come on, man. Come on, man. You've got a robot maid, a butler, and everything you have has dollar signs all over it. And Reggie's the bad guy because he's like, I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm independently wealthy. I've got a whole lot of stuff.
I think it's because he was so smug about it, you know. Yeah. It's like, you want to hang with me because I'm rich. And his Richie's friends are like, no, we don't.
But as a kid, I really enjoyed them. They even had their – I didn't like comics that were drawn like Marvel and DC, because I thought that sort of drawing was too scary when I was a little kid. But I did like the Richie Rich Vaults of Mystery, where he and Cadbury would solve mysteries. And usually I had already solved the mystery by page two, but that's why they were written that way, so the kids could feel smart. And there was also that trend in the 70s to make humor comics have that sort of mystery thing. Archie would have, back in like the early 70s, there would be sort of a what is the horrible secret of the bog outside Riverdale sort of thing.
Dun, dun, dun.
There was a point in the 70s where Richie Rich had 20 regular comics. It was a huge seller, especially in the 70s. In the 70s, Richie Rich sold tons of comics. I've seen sales reports from that era, and the Richie Rich books were in the, you know, the main Richie Rich title was in the top 10 sales.
It's one of those things like, why doesn't it sell today?
Well, it really fell off toward the end of the 70s. And part of it was that they were losing placement in grocery stores and drug stores and other stores, but also your neighborhood store, your Five and Dime. They were being destroyed by Kmart and Walmart, who didn't really want to have comics because comics, in a lot of ways, were thought of as kind of a kid magnet. The kids would loiter there and read, and parents would use the comic rack as kind of a babysitter while they shopped.
Well, that was the stories I used to talk about. You know, they had those infamous three packs, and people would gut the three pack trying to get the comic they wanted. That's how I got a bunch of like early John Byrne X-Men comics, early as in like right before Phoenix died. So not like I scored a 94. And eventually, I do recall once, it wasn't with me, but with a friend, where he had a single comic and they wouldn't sell it to him because they're like, no, these are supposed to sell in a three pack. And I had never had that happen before, you know, because they were usually like, oh, ring it up a buck, whatever, we don't care. So apparently somebody, that was a crabby old lady too, you know, she's probably like, I'm not going to give these kids nothing. They're going to have to buy the three pack or nothing. So again, they sold them, but it wasn't like a newsstand. We're like, okay, you know, you can come next month and get the next issue. And I think I told a story about the old Murphy store that actually had a rack of comics with half of them with the top logo missing. The old, you know, rip it off, put it back on the counter, sell it for full price thing.
Yeah, I remember
didn't those. Fall for that. Mainly because I wanted the whole comic.
Now, one of the weird things about Casper was not created by Harvey Comics. It was created by Paramount Pictures for their cartoon company, Famous Studios. But when Paramount shut down their animation line, they sold all the characters to Harvey. They sold them Little Audrey, Casper the Friendly Ghost, Baby Huey, Herman and Catnip. And that's why Casper is owned by Harvey and not by Paramount, even though those Paramount cartoons were what Casper was based on. I always thought that was a little weird that they just, yeah, screw it. And they sold it in 51 when they could have been licensing the stuff to TV. Because in a lot of ways, that's where Warner Brothers characters really became huge, was when they started repackaging the Looney Tunes stuff for television.
I do remember on our, I think it was the independent affiliate, they used to do the old Harvey Casper cartoons.
Yes.
Which was kind of the same thing over and over, you know. He wanted a friend and everybody'd see the ghost and a ghost and freak out and Casper would feel bad. And then the next cartoon, same thing.
Now, they repackaged those cartoons, sold them as Harvey Tunes, and Harvey continued production of new comics and a handful of new cartoons for TV, including ones for Casper the Friendly Ghost. They also had Spooky the Little Tough Ghost, the Ghostly Trio, things like that. They were added to the line, but most of those did not make it to the cartoon. And I remember even as a kid, they'd have the little thing on the ad page where Harvey cartoons are playing in your neighborhood. And I would look and it's no, they're not playing anywhere near Peoria. Because we didn't have any of those anime. We didn't have a lot of the syndicated packages that other places had. Because Peoria was such a small market, they had no money. You know, we had black and white comedies and stuff. We did have a cartoon show that got Deputy Dog and all the stuff from that animation studio. And when I go back and look at it now, oh my God, those are ugly and bad. But the show was Captain Jinx and Salty Sam, who were pirates. And that was our only kid show. They did show, when that went away, they did show the Mickey Mouse Club reruns. But most of what we got was, you know, we got Adam's Family and Munsters and Leave It to Beaver. Yeah. And
we had Partridge Family.
Make Room for Daddy. Yeah, well, you guys were getting newer shows in your good markets.
We did have the Mickey Mouse Club, because I remember in the 70s watching that, which is cool because I just wanted to see the cartoons. I didn't really care about anything else.
I did like Spin and Marty, because, yeah, they were on a dude ranch and had horses and stuff, and we had horses, so cool. I could be like them. And when I think back, I can't remember any Spin and Marty story at all, other than when Annette Funicello went to visit them. That's all I remember from Spin and Marty. So it must have been really, really exciting.
Really riveting. Riveting.
Now, was there any news out of San Diego that made you kind of go,
News, no. But when we get to geeking, I'll talk about all the previews that I watched. And I am utterly, you know, right now we're kind of in a bit of a dry spell for me TV-wise, because other than Orville, there's nothing that I'm like, oh my God, I got to watch it. And we don't really, I haven't watched Invincibles. I haven't watched Ms. Marvel. I watched one episode of Moon Knight. I haven't watched The Boys. I got lots of things I could watch, but I'm just not hyped about it, you know. And it's, other than that, I really didn't pay attention much to San Diego. I do got to give a shout out to Dan Wiesemeyer, though, because he was posting pictures while he was out there. And it was fun. I appreciate that. He's out there, of course, getting his just dues, as I call it, because Dan's got so much talent. And with the revival of the X-Men animated series, again, that's something I could be watching too. He's doing the art for, he had the big hardcover book that we talked about a little bit past. He's had the art done on the new line of toys that Hasbro's putting out, where all the figures are in VHS boxes and they're crazy expensive. I can't find them anywhere but Hasbro. And I got to the point where I'm like, I was going to collect them all because they look really cool when you put them up. And it's a new line of toys, because the big thing they're doing now, they've discovered that some people are buying toys, taking something out of it, or even replacing the entire effing toy and returning the junk piece. And, you know, Target, Walmart, they don't know what's going on. So they're coming out with, if you ever go back to the collector section, they have box sets. And so they don't know if they're going to have cellophane windows, but it sounds like initially you're going to get a figure. It's going to be sealed. It's going to be boxed. You're not going to be able to look at the figure without buying it first. And even then, if you buy it, some places like Target are, once you open a collector figure, they will not take it back.
I've heard should.
No, I agree. It's kind of like Pokemon cards or candy, whatever. You don't open it and return it. And it wasn't something that they were going to do, but they're discovering, like I said, unscrupulous collectors, or they're buying the piece and then returning it. Even sometimes in Hot Wheels, somebody will open the box, take the exclusive car out, and then replace it with a junk car and return it. And then, of course, the next kid comes along and buys it. He doesn't know any better. Again, way off what was going on in San Diego. But so just some different things coming up. The X-Men line, which I have not – I've got one coming, and I suppose when I get it, I'm going to go, oh, that's so cool. But other than that, I really wasn't paying attention much to what was going on in San Diego, because I'm kind of like – it'll all be repeated on the news. It'll be repeated on the different talk shows. I'm sure you might have seen something that I didn't care about that maybe you caught.
There was next to
toss it back to you.
There was next to no comic news.
Oh, yeah. Comic news? No.
The biggest comic news was that it is kind of an open secret in comics now that Oni Press is dead.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They fired just about all the office staff.
Yeah, we talked about that. I remember. I didn't. Well, at least we got all Kaiju Max out of it.
Yeah. And Scott Pilgrim. And let's see. What was that? Six Bullets? Six something like that. I can't remember. I'd have to dig it up. They had good books back in the day. Lately, they've been moving toward the young adult line. And I'm kind of surprised that it is falling apart. But one of the people said, yeah, all you need to do is look at their press release to know they've gotten rid of all the office staff. No person with any PR experience would have released that press release. It wasn't in the correct format for newspapers and magazines and websites, etc. And it was so poorly worded, you couldn't figure out what the hell they were saying. But I do want to talk about a big news story that dropped during San Diego. Had nothing to do with San Diego. Nothing to do with comics, really, but something to do with what we talk about.
Ooh.
Vince McMahon, late Friday of last week, retired.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
And well, it was very much shocked. I've just realized I'm 77 years old, and it's time for me to retire. So shall I tell you the true story?
He's passed away, so I don't think he'll mind if I do Paul Harvey, and now the rest of the story. Look it up, kids. It's on Google.
Well, about a week and a half before he put out the retirement release, they completed their the board completed their investigation, we have heard, and there's a whole lot more that's going to be dropping in the next few weeks. There's a huge story going to be on Bryant Gumbel's HBO sports show with a lot of new stuff. The Wall Street Journal is prepping a major story. Variety had a story run. And when they announced the quarterly earnings for WWE, a couple of days later, they released a statement that they have to refile with the SEC because over $14.5 million in payments from Vince McMahon were from the WWE funds and must be reported to the Securities and Exchange Commission. The Securities and Exchange Commission will be investigating Vincent Kennedy McMahon. He was removed from everything. He is completely gone from the company. He has no say in anything. He is still the number one stockholder, but you will probably see over the next few months where they move his stock to a non-voting status. The CEOs, it's co-CEOs, it's Nick Khan, who was the former head of a talent agency that they brought in to kind of help them grease the wheels and get more into Hollywood and understand more about TV deals and things like that. And Stephanie McMahon, they are co-CEOs. Triple H is now the head of talent relations and creative.
Which may get me watching WWE again.
It may get me watching again as well. One thing I want to caution people, do not expect to tune into SmackDown this week. And it's, Jim Crockett Promotions or the UWF of the 80s or even NXT from a couple of years ago. This is a cruise ship, not a speedboat. And they have a lot of masters to answer to. From what I hear, Raw was already sort of laid out. Raw this week was already laid out. Very few changes were made. The biggest thing you're going to see, and a lot of people who work backstage are telling every dirt sheet and reporter they can, is that the biggest thing you're going to see is they're not going to be repeating the same thing over and over again. Because one of the big things that's been happening with WWE over the past 2 years is they will put a show together, and then the morning of the show, Vince will look it over. He'll hate it. He'll rip it up and pretty much put in the same things that he's done the past few weeks because he didn't quite remember he'd done them before. And the guy's 77, you know, I completely understand that. But it always made it hard, especially on Raw, when they would rip up the script and they would be writing when Raw would start. They would not know what they would know what the main event is, but they wouldn't know how they were getting there when they started the show. So you're going to see a lot of that, where that's going to go away. Things are going to get smoother. I would imagine we'll start seeing changes after SummerSlam, because SummerSlam was locked.
And I also hope that there's two things that they need to do. And again, we may have talked about this. I know in wrestling circles, do the long-term planning. You know, don't hotshot stuff. You know, sometimes a major show would be coming up, like WrestleMania, and you're like, you haven't even announced your undercard. Whereas in the days when I watched, and I'm talking 80s with Hulk Hogan and the Attitude Era, they had this stuff going since Christmas. I mean, you were dying to get to WrestleMania because they've been fighting. I mean, the whole Andre Hulk fight in WrestleMania 3 was going on for the longest time. I remember watching main event Saturday night, and we were all like, oh my God, Hogan and Andre are together, and Andre would swing and Hulk would block him, hit Andre twice, and then of course everybody piled on and broke him up. And with Triple H, who is a student of wrestling, it's going to take time, like you said, Corey, but I hope he gets into that. He'll start making it so, hey, why are these two fighting? There's a reason for it. That's the storyline. The resolution, they're in the ring fighting it out. And as far as I'm concerned, he could just dig up old AWA tapes. It's all in their vault, and just reuse all those old storylines. Because other than you and I and some older guys, nobody knows these old stories. And they could get a lot of mileage out of that. It's interesting, yeah, though. I did see some guys left, like Brock Lesnar left. He was pulled.
Nope, Brock Lesnar left. And then he came back for the end of the show. And the rumor is that Paul Heyman's the one who, look, I know that you and Vince were close, but you realize you're one of the two big stars. This is a way for you to make a whole lot of money. And if you show that you'll play ball with the new team, they're going to keep throwing money at you. Okay.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't see that, because like I said, I'm just waiting to hear from someone like you, like, oh God, you got to start watching this again.
And I'm not even going to do that until the guys at PW Insider say it, because yeah. I watched Raw for I watched WWE for 30 years, and it got to the point where it was a chore. It was painful. It was, oh God, I have to slog through this shit again. I want my wrestling to be fun. Speaking of that, however, there has been sort of a washover into AEW. Not everyone is saying this, but a few people are. They're saying that Tony is kind of freaking out that Triple H is now in charge of WWE.
He probably should.
Because it's like, oh crap, they're going to get good again.
This
and
is
he's just throwing
like
shit at the wall now.
This is probably like when Marvel saw, oh shit, Jack Kirby went to DC.
Yeah.
We always bring it back to comics eventually.
Or when DC, over at DC, they were like, oh crap, Joe Quesada's taken over. and he and the new owner have said they're going after our trade paperback market. Shit. We had that all to ourselves. Shit. And I think it's going to lead to better wrestling, except Tony Khan, who's the head of AEW, is just throwing shit at the wall. His stories aren't making sense. The matches are good, but the stories can be a headache. Hopefully he calms down.
Yeah. Just stick with your plan. Don't worry about what the other guy's doing.
I think the important thing when you're in any sort of entertainment, it's good to keep an eye on what the other people are doing. but you can't base what you do on what the other people are doing. Now, one of the things that I think WWE desperately, desperately needs, the guy in charge of creative was 77 years old. The guy who's in charge of booking is in his 60s. Triple H himself is in his 50s. And they're trying to appeal to males age 18 to 34. You got to bring in younger people. You got to bring in people who are younger. And I'll say this, Joe, I am 57 years old. I have no idea what's cool with people in their 20s. None. No idea. And I don't care. Now, if my job was to cater to them, I might care a little bit, but I really wouldn't understand it in the same way that your parents didn't understand the stuff you were into in your teens and 20s and their parents and so on and so on. There comes a point in your life where you don't connect with the youth culture anymore, not because you're an old fuddy-duddy, but because it's, you know, that's not for me anymore. I don't know what the current pop songs are because they're not for me. They're about, you know, finding a girl and getting a date on a Saturday night and going out and partying and blah, blah. And I'm not going to do that. So I'm not going to listen to songs about that. Trends, I know a little. I know that TikTok dances are big, but do I know any of the dances? Do I know anybody who's a TikTok star? Do I know anything about it? No. And it's not, I don't care.
Yeah.
I have my own stuff I'm into. And you saw that a lot with WWE, where Vince would yell at the announcers to mention stuff that's 50 years old. And he would repackage wrestlers. I mean, Lacey Evans, they repackaged her as the sassy Southern Belle. Joe, does anybody under the name age of 60 know what the hell a sassy Southern Belle is?
Or care?
Yeah. Bring in younger people who know what younger people like. When WWE became cool in the Attitude Era, it's because he let the wrestlers who were younger sort of move the needle. And that's when Triple H and Shawn Michaels and those guys pushed the envelope and made WWF cool.
Before, well, that's something
it wasn't
too
cool. It was, oh, look, it's Duke the Dumpster Drosy. It's Repo Man. It's the Goon. It's Bob Holly is a race car driver.
I am the Mountie. The one thing that I hope that WWE does is when they have somebody start to get hot, they don't squash them.
Yeah.
Because they are terrible at that. And again, this is just, if you ever read WWE, this is Vince's fun. He liked to build a guy up, destroy you, put you at the bottom. You know, you might have been just in the main event last week, and now you're going to be in the lower cards for a while just to see what you did, because you got to fight for your opportunity. Yeah, well, you keep taking it away. It was just some perversion he had. I don't understand why he did it, but every time I read
To see how you would react. Remember when Brock Lesnar came back, first thing he did, he had to job to John Cena. Now, that I agreed with, because one of the
ways the way
Brock Lesnar
left
is, you mean I got to lose? I got to lose to Undertaker? I got to lose to these guys? No, I'm not losing. Fuck this. I'm going to go to the NFL. So, but let's take a guy like.
But it's a terrible way to run your company.
But
because you just that squash talent. Well, I did in a bit, because how many times had we seen a move, a push happen, right, and it just fizzled?
For Brock, it was different. For Brock, it was, are you going to play ball with us?
Yeah,
well, let's take
again,
Dolph
Brock
Ziggler.
Was different, but all the people that stood at it. I mean, we could go on and on, but you got somewhere else you want to go with this.
Yeah. Let's take Dolph Ziggler. Now, Dolph came in, hell of a worker. Used the Shawn Michaels method of he bumped all over the screen to make his opponents look great. And there for a while, the crowd started getting into him. They started getting into him, and they really got into him. So what they do, they have him win the Money in the Bank. And then the day after WrestleMania, he cashes in the Money in the Bank and wins. And that crowd goes crazy. I had not heard a pop like that in years. He beat John Cena. He wins the title. The crowd's all over it. The next week, Cena gets his win back. And Dolph Ziggler is shoved down the card. And you would think, okay, he just showed he could be the champion. Crowd really loved him. What did they do? Oh, we're going to make him a mid-card guy again. But then he became the guy who everybody on their way up would beat. And you do that for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And then Vince would go, okay, it's time to heat him up again. And the crowd just didn't care. Why? Because he's been losing for 4 years. You can't destroy your roster at the expense of one guy. Remember the Nexus when they came in and they beat the shit out of everybody and everybody was scared of them. And 2 weeks later, they had a match with the whole team had a match with John Cena and he beat them all one at a time. Boom, 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 boom. And they were done.
Yeah.
They were just done. Why? Because one John Cena beats seven guys. Who gives a shit about him? They did that again. That the thing that triggered me to stop watching. They had this angle where of an invasion. These people called Retribution. They were cutting the power at the performance center where they were performing. They were coming in. They were tearing the ring apart and beating up everybody. Just destroying them. Okay, then... we're going to have the big confrontation. What happened? Well, we've given the Retribution contract, so now they're wrestlers. No, these are invaders that you were fighting against. And now, oh, now they're just wrestlers. And what happened? Their first week? Their first week. MVP and Bobby Lashley destroyed all of them. All six of them. Boom. Defeated. It was a handicap tag team match. Bobby Lashley and MVP beat six people. The next week, they get beat again. No one cared. After that, yeah. They were just, okay, I guess they're jobbers now.
You know, and I even think of things like, was it Zach?
Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder, who they told, go make yourself a star.
And he did.
He's the first guy to go to YouTube, made himself a huge star. Crowds were chanting for him. What do they do? Okay, we're going to beat him up. We're going to have John Cena make John Cena steal his girlfriend. Kane's going to beat the shit out of him. He'll be in a wheelchair, and then Kane's going to push him off the stage when he's got a broken arm, broken leg, and he's all bandaged up. There you go. He
even had his own song that I downloaded. That's how hot he was. It was just one of those fun things. You know, he called himself, what was it, the Internet Champ or something?
Yeah.
And they got over really well. Let's bring it into the storyline. And then they crapped it.
Well, it's more, I know, you got yourself over. We didn't want you to do that.
I know.
So we got to shit all over you.
That was the whole thing. The other thing, too, they need a continuity cop. I think Triple H can do it. But there's so many times that, okay, these two are bitter enemies. Next time they meet, oh, they're friends because they're tag teaming. No. I mean, I grew up AWA when Greg Gagne teamed up with Jerry Blackwell. That was big because they spent the better part of the decade hating each other. Every time there was a battle royal, they were usually the first two to go after each other. And we remember this stuff, but in WWE, it was like, they fought last week, but it doesn't matter. They're okay this week.
Because Vince said nobody will remember that shit.
And he was wrong.
Because he didn't remember that shit.
The other problem they had, and this was, again, I don't think I've watched for since like CM Punk left. WWE anyways. Build up your younger talent. You know, I couldn't even tell you. You talked a minute ago about, you know, watching TV or listening to radio and you don't know half these younger guys. Other than Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, I don't know any of the wrestlers because I ain't watching. I don't care. I start to watch And it's like, I don't know who these people are. I don't know why I should care about them. They're just generic A, B, C, D. You know, really, for a while there in WWE, you didn't even have to watch program. Just tune in at the end of it and watch the main event. I'm not saying come back to, okay, we're going to spend an hour at a three-hour show just talking. Although, if USA wants to keep it a three-hour show, they might have to.
Well, and how many people did they build up to be huge monster heels until they met John Cena, or they met, you know, well, John Cena mostly. And then John Cena beats him three pay-per-views in a row, and no one cares.
Yeah. Even when Hulk Hogan was in his prime, he got beat down. The reason you got beat down is because when the pay-per-view came around, we paid to see Hogan win.
Yeah.
That was the point. I absolutely love when Roddy Piper came to WCW, and his whole shtick was, the only reason you were as hot as you were because people came to see you beat me. Without me, you're nothing. And it, again, that storyline kind of went nowhere, but it was just a brilliant idea because you're like, holy crap, you're right. You got to have
had,
a good
And they
deal.
Had reversed roles.
Yeah.
Hogan was the heel, Piper was the hero.
I still love watching some of the old stuff on the YouTubes, you know, where it's like, oh yeah, here's where Roddy Piper come in, and just watching Hogan freak. And yeah, we lived for that. Anything to make the bad guy feel bad. Again, we're complaining a lot. We're saying what we don't. I trust Triple H. I hope he can write it quickly. He's not doing like what Bischoff and Russo did. Oh, okay. Everything we know is gone. We're going to start over tomorrow.
It's a reboot. No.
A reboot. Well, it could be. I'd watch it if they rebooted right away.
Well, here's the problem with that. Think of all the partners they have.
Yeah.
They've got toys that are, they've got a toy line, and that toy line is planned out for the next 6 to 8 months. They've got animated stuff. They've got series for Peacock. They've got their TV partners with Comcast and Fox. You think Fox was happy when they heard that Brock Lesnar had walked out, when they're paying WWE $205 million a year for SmackDown? Oh, no, they were not happy. And that's why they were, Paul, get him back here. Get him back here now. So I don't think you're going to get a reset button. What I do think you're going to start seeing is they're going to tighten the bolts first. It's not going to be when wrestler A was injured by Roman Reigns. And when he comes back, he has nothing to do with Roman Reigns. No, it'll be, you put me out, I want my revenge.
Which is how it should be.
Right. It's going to be tightening that stuff. It's not going to be, well, we need a baby face, so this person's going to turn baby face for no reason. Triple H in NXT always made sure that if somebody was going to turn, there was a reason for it. And they set it up ahead of time. It wasn't, I just decided I hate you fans.
And if they do hate each other, I mean, that was something that older WWE did well, especially before a big pay-per-view. When, oh, well, we're going to make these two are going to fight in the main event. Now I have to team up against these two really bad guys. And usually they had a big brawl, which would drive me insane, and I could not wait for the pay-per-view. And again, I know if I could sit down and just talk with Triple H, I would just say, oh my God, just you know what to do. Just please do it fast and you'll get me back. I'll have Peacock. I when WWE Network came around, I started it. I paid my $10 a month. I watched old programs. I basically wait for you or for the PW Insider guys to say, oh, go check this out. Or even my good buddy Turbo would call and say, oh, you got to check this match out. It was brilliant. But when they went to Peacock, Peacock was like, hey, you can get 3 months free. Just continue your subscription. I let it lapse. Hey, you can get 6 months free. I got everybody else. I don't really need it. But Peacock, if you're listening, boy, if you can get behind Triple H and get him to turn around, I will plunk my money down so I can watch Raw. Not that Tony and the AEW wants to hear that, but, you know. Hey.
Well, you know who also wants you to plunk your money down, Joe?
These guys are sponsors?
Yes, they do. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger. All sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And I don't want you to plunk your money down. I just want to take some of your time, just a little bit of your time, with all of these other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast, and he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha.
And before we get going, I figured this would be a good spot where we can talk about upcoming comic shows and stuff.
There you go. I was going to say, Joe.
Yeah, let's put it on. Because I got
some
hot news.
Are some cool things going on in the Twin Cities area or other signings?
From Kelly himself, the next MCBF show will be September 24th at the Mermaid again. That's all I know. He just sent me a quick text. I was chomping at the bit because this is just hot news right away. Of course, the week before that, our buddies at the Minnesota Comic Exchange Comic Show will have theirs up in Valley Creek Mall on September 17th. I think it's like a 9 a.m. to, I'm not sure when it is. I'll have to double check. But we got some time for that. And looking at some others, there's a couple that are people who haven't gotten a hold of us, but There's a Twin Cities Comic and Toy Expo show August 20th, Bloomington, Minnesota, at the Bloomington Armory, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. free admission. So I will definitely be checking that out, mainly because I can go and then go to work right away. And then, excuse me, there is...
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Actually, my daughter helped me. She installed an ad blocker on my Chrome, so all these ads, even on YouTube, don't pop up. But every so often one pops up and it throws me because you're like, what? There's also from Nerd Street, Twin Cities Con, which is November 11th through 13th. This sounds more like a show because you're going to have the cast of My Hero Academia. There'll be Power Rangers there, the cast of Apex Legends, Mick Foley, John Glover from Smallville, Paul Schreier, Power Ranger. Just kind of going down the list here. Chris Weikamp from My Hero Academy. Kristen McGuire from That Time I Got Reincarnated as Slime, which I think is pretty funny. Let's see, Phil Lamar from Futurama, Samurai Jacks, Book of Boba Fett. Yeah, this is more of a name con. Timothy Zahn. Keep flipping down. Larry Hama.
Great, great. Oh, yeah. Writer.
Larry Hama from G.I. Joe. And of course, I love it when the MASH episode comes on that he's on.
An editor at Marvel for over a decade.
Ming Chen from Comic Book Men. Yeah, they got a lot of lists here. And there are a lot of people that I would go and pay to see. You know, like Mick Foley would be fun. It all depends. You know, for me, the big problem is work and ticket prices and signings because they don't really have anything there. And they say check back regularly because the guest list was not final. So that should be kind of fun. So there's four for you. If you got something coming up, let us know because we'll blurb it on the podcast. And it doesn't have to be necessarily locally because this podcast goes out and around the world. And we'll I'll blurb anything. You know me. I'm that type of guy.
You'll even blurb your own YouTube page. Not your YouTube. You'll even blurb your own eBay.
Actually, I thought about you, YouTube. And I'll tell you why when we get to it. However, that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about eBay. And I've had a couple weeks when I was feeling better. I've been putting tons of stuff up. And even as we speak, I've been watching because all of a sudden, four things have sold, which is kind of sweet. I'll just give you a quick list of things since every time I talk about, oh, I just put this online, it sells. Sold a couple My Little Pony, number 3 from Friendship is Magic, and these are different variant covers. Lady Pendragon, if you remember that one, they had a bunch of gold logo, chrome flipbook variant thingies. I Hate Fairyland, the F variants, a Captain America number 17, the Reg Morales variant cover, which was a high dollar book, about $50, to some of the lower end books like X-Men number 1, the Party variant cover that Marx Brooks did. That was during the Dawn of X. A lot of Vampirillas sold. I sold a Green Arrow volume 1 Into the Woods hardcover from the Brightest Day area. A Phantom comic from Moonstone, Phantom Ghost Who Walks, number 1, variant cover C. Scooby-Doo Team-Up, number 12, that had, I believe, Harley Quinn in it. And it goes, Corey, do you remember Justice Machine?
Yes, I do.
I actually
owned sold by my internet friend Mark Ellis now. He actually bought the property and has tried a couple of times to bring it back.
Well, I had one of the original number 5s, which I wasn't aware of, and ended up selling it. So, and plus, I've got stuff since last Black Friday we got together. Hell, probably back from Free Comic Book Day from last year. Not the one we just went to, but previous. You know, I get these things super cheap, and I check, and it's like, if it's not in my collection, I'll eBay it. I mean, if I want to read it, I'll read it first. But, and I just, well, I spent the last couple days prepping because I picked up a ton of Red Sonja and My Little Pony and Vampirella variant covers, regular covers, and silly, silly cheap prices. And they're going to be on eBay at silly prices. In other words, they'll be the cheapest they'll be. But first, I had to get what I have in order because, believe me, when I sell a – right now it used to be, okay, well, I'm not going to sort Red Sonja. Just put it in a Red Sonja pile. Okay, I got 87 Red Sonja. I'm looking for one. So I basically spent the last couple of days not only double-checking to make sure I've got the lowest price on the eBays, but making sure I've got it correct in terms of – you know, do I have the right picture up? I actually found a few where it's like, that's a very nice Belladonna number one convention special exclusive gold foil variant cover with COA. However, it is not supposed to be on a Red Sonja number six volume. So, you know, just goofy things like that. Because, you know, I get into a rut and sometimes at the end of the night, I miss something. And of course, eBay loves it when I put in all the different specs, like, okay, who wrote it? Who's the variant cover? Is it a comic book? Is it a graphic novel? So I'm pretty happy to say I've got everything set. I got everything rocking and rolling. So if you jump to the eBays, you know where they are. Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. As listeners of this here show, even if you're brand new listeners, send me a note. I got a couple notes. A couple guys want to trade. Some people are like, hey, will you take $8 for this? Yeah. One guy was like, you know, I'm trying to pick up these, I think he was going after some of the later IDW G.I. Joes, which are really silly price because nobody was collecting them. And he's like, I'm trying to get this lower. You know, can you go any better? And it's like, well, I'll tell you what. I got it at $30. I'll cut it at half price because it's been sitting in my inventory for a while. That's why I'm crazy. You know what to do. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I go watch a whole bunch more episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds and let Joe finish the podcast himself.
Are you caught up with it?
No.
Oh, God. When we get together.
Although I did watch the so-called comedy episode.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. When you get to the last episode. When you get to the last episode, we're going to talk.
It's freaking geeking, Joe.
Oh, I'm still geeking. I haven't geeked so hard since the reveal that I am the Guardian forever. But that's Discovery. It has nothing to do with this. Freaking. Well, let's see. Last time I was freaking, I think I was talking about Sins of Omission. And to tie on to that, speaking of older people who just don't get it. Okay. I went on Facebook because I was feeling bad, and I did something, you know, talking about, well, you know, my brother, my sister, they're mad at me because I didn't help my folks move, and I asked my folks, they're not mad. It's just tiresome. My brother's not on Facebook. My sister blocked me. I'm not looking for you to talk to him. I'm just upset about it. And people came back to me. Most of it was sympathetic. Some were like, yeah, I have a brother, sister I haven't talked to in years. I know, Corey, we've talked offline. There's family members you haven't talked to for whatever reason. So, and I felt better about it because I was like, well, you know, it's good to get that shit out of you. I still feel bad about it, which sucks because I have no idea if they feel bad about it. And again, I talked to mom and dad and they said, no, you don't owe us an apology. You had a hernia, you had COVID, Chris had COVID. You know, you were there to help. And they moved and it's all taken care of. So why my brother and sister are mad at me or who they're mad at me for, who they're being mad at me, who they're being mad for, I don't know. But my mom came to me and gave me one of these. You have to take that down. I said, take what down? You went on and on about how Jim and Kathy are mad at you and you don't want to do it. I'm like, no, I'm not taking it down. It's how I feel. Well, you know, so some people are seeing that. And I'm like, who's seeing it? Well, and then she names off my aunts. Now, way back in the beginning of Facebook, I got into it with a conservative cousin of mine. And it was a political discussion. And, you know, we met face to face and neither of us had a bad feeling about it because we weren't name calling each other. We were just talking and, hey, you're wrong. This is right. Oh, my God. The aunts thought we hated each other. You guys have to stop fighting on Facebook. What? We're not fighting. This is talking. It occurred to me between that and my mom now, they don't get Facebook. They really don't get it. And the fact that, oh, you're airing public laundry. It's like, well, I'm not going to keep it inside. You know, someone wants to be toxic to me. I'm going to call them out. Either way, I erased it. Whatever. End of subject. So any of you who reached out, I do appreciate it. And I can bitch about it here because I really doubt any of my family listen to this here podcast. So up yours. Health-wise. Oh, okay. We talked about the COVID shit. I'm going through an RA flare-up again because I cannot get Accredo to fill my prescription for my RA drug, which I think is Renvoc. I call them. Oh, yeah, it's being ordered. But why is it being delayed? I need this. I've been off it for 2 weeks. I'm flaring up. Flaring up means my neck hurts. My feet hurt. My fingers hurt. It hurts. I mean, this is part of what, like last year, when I had the problem with my job and I couldn't pat down because I couldn't feel things in my fingers. I mean, if it wasn't for these drugs, I would be a crippled invalid right now. In so much pain, I think I would rather just end it. Don't worry. I'm not that way now. I won't be that way. But I mean, the quality of life and pain for people with untreated RA is horrendous. And I'm getting the bureaucratic shuffle because I can, yeah, they're processing it. You want to talk to a physician? I said, no, unless the physician's going to airmail me some Renvoc, because even if I get it, it's going to take a few weeks to take effect. And I sent a note to my RA doc and said, I don't know what the F is going on, but it's time to switch gears and maybe try it again. I don't know if it's because I've got a new health insurance. I don't know. It's because somebody isn't talking. You know, it's like, oh, we sent the request. Okay, well, who do I call with? It's frustrating as hell. You wonder why people hate healthcare. You wonder why Corey is stressed out all the time. You know, and when I talk to these people, I don't yell because I know it ain't their fault. And if anything, they might be able to help me deal with it. But it's frustrating as fuck. We were going to do reviews, but we went down a rabbit hole. I'm going to talk about this one because I had it set aside for kind of a negative review, but I figured I'll talk about it now, and then I don't have to deal with it if we ever do get to our review, which...
Well, maybe next week.
Well, maybe, but we're getting close to the previews time again if Box Day ever ships on time. That'll be next week's freaking. Anyways, I picked up a copy of Marvel Visionaries, Mike Deodato Jr., The Mighty Thor, because I remember this run fondly. This was right before the end, and I believe it was Onslaught, right, where they did the Heroes Reborn. So they took Thor, canceled it, gave it to the Image duo that were running it. We have talked about Mike Deodato. Every time he does something, I mentioned it because I loved his art. I thought, you know what? I picked this up cheap and I thought I'd read it. And yes, his art is definitely a product of, when the hell did this come out?
The 90s. His art style back then was very, very imagey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When the Enchantress shows up, boobs and legs half the size of the page. Now, what was fun about the very first part of Deodato is that he did Thor 491 to 494 and then 498 to 500. Warren Ellis wrote the story, and it was really fun because it dealt with a crime. There's a detective on the tail. The Enchantress was trying to be a good person, her and Thor had a falling out because Odin had kicked them out. They were kissing. They were making nookie. I did have to laugh. Again, this is quite a spoiler at the end, but when Thor deals with the problem and the detective who's been tracking the problem as well shows up, he comes in, he goes, "Hey, is anything wrong?" And Enchantress kind of looks at him and goes, "No, everything's fine." Snaps, he disappears. He's dead. Thor's like, "What just happened?" "Nothing, dear." And they take off. I was like, that is so Warren Ellis. However, he didn't do 495 to 497, which was weird because when you get to 498, they're referring to the events of those issues. You can catch up because Marvel did a good deal. You know, okay, I kind of remember what was going on. So, again, this is just fun for Mike Deodato art. It's not a complete story, although I did love the Ellis story. I think you're better off just picking up an Epic collection. And again, you know, we talked about it, and I think I picked it up just because of nostalgia's sake. And it's like sometimes you go back and you reread this, and you're like, oh, yeah, this was not as good as I thought it was. And even, you know, when you start getting to 500, William Mr. Loebs was writing it. So, but it was an ending. And again, for it's going on to the eBays because I guess it was what it was. I got to revisit it. I probably would have better off going to Marvel Unlimited or just buying the other ones. So again, a book to avoid unless you're a real hardcore Mike Deodato fan. But again, do the Epic and get the whole storyline, and then it ends, and then you can jump back. Who started the – was it Jurgens, wasn't it?
Yes.
Did the store afterwards? Yeah, then just start up with him again. So that's pretty much it for freaking. Corey, what you freaking on?
The last 2 years, San Diego Comic-Con has been wonderful because all the panels were online, all of them. This year, none of them. Because San Diego's back where they could go to the show again. And they said, well, you know, there's all this copyrighted material in the Hall H. I could not give less of a fuck about anything in Hall H. I don't care about the new TV series this fall, what movie's going to come out and fart all over theaters in 3 months. I don't care. I want the panels for Marvel, the panels for DC, the panels for Image, the interview panel with Todd McFarlane, everything that Mark Evanier did, every panel with every golden, silver, and bronze age creator. I want them. They need to be there because these people, the gold, silver, and bronze age creators, they're not going to be with us much longer. So let's get those interviews up online so that it, like last year, it was 2 years ago, we got this wonderful hour-long conversation with Mark Evanier and Steve Sherman before Steve Sherman passed away, talking about their time as Jack Kirby's assistants. How about you gather up a bunch of Jim Steranko's assistants, get them on a panel. Put these panels online. The idea of, well, the panels are only available at conventions is such a 19th century thing at this point. All it takes is setting up a phone. You buy the phone stand and the tripod and you click record. You can record the whole thing. Oh, we're worried about copyright. There's no copyright to worry about when it's five people on a panel telling stories. You only have to worry about copyright when you're showing copyrighted material, not when you're just having people talk. It's such a waste. It's such a goddamn waste at this point. After 2 years of this wonderful mass of great stuff. Artists talking about how to break in the business. Artists talking about how to break down a page. Artists talking about inking tools, penciling tools, different software, what works, what doesn't, all of this stuff. This year, we just can't be asked to do it. It's a waste. If I were running a convention at this point, first thing I would do is set up, make sure that the panel room was something where it could be recorded, and every panel would be streaming live and then available on YouTube. Because that is free advertising for everybody. It's free advertising for the convention. It's free advertising for the people on the panel. It's free advertising for every project they have on the panel. It's free advertising for further conventions they're going to do. Joe, pull me out of this tailspin. What are you geeking on?
You know, I was talking about things that I'm really, really looking forward to. Again, I just sat and I watched a lot of trailers. Oh, the new She-Hulk. Oh, Sandman. Oh, my. You know, I'm a little bummed that, who's the actor from Lucifer wasn't quite going to play Lucifer. I thought that would have been a good tie-in. But whoever they got that's playing Lucifer is awesome. They showed a brief clip of Death, and I had Holly. You should have seen Holly jump off the couch because I started showing her the Sandman. And she was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And then, oh, my God, they got one with Death. And I was like, boom. She was like a cat with a catnip, you know. Brilliant. But just the teaser for Picard was awesome. I will take a sidebar. There's a thing on YouTube's called Trek Culture. Absolutely love. Anytime I watch a brand new episode of anything of the new Star Treks, I will – wait until they post the new video because they have their crew come on and talk about the ups and downs and then what they call crustacean observation, where they go into the Easter egg things that I may or may not have caught. And they did it with Picard. They did it with Lower Deck because Lower Deck had a really – I mean, their whole thing on Trek Culture was just talking about all the little tiny references from the trailer. And Lower Deck's – not that far away. I think August, end of August. Sandman will probably be less than 4 days away from this when this podcast drops. And so I'm looking forward to both of those. Anyways, Trek Culture is trying to get up to 250 subscribers. Check them out. Tons of other things, you know, all Star Trek nerdy stuff. Like I watched one the other day, 10 top secret things of Star Trek. And, of course, with the comments, you can always say yes or no, whether you agree or not. Like them, subscribe them, help them out, and mention our podcast, because it would be a gas to have them come on here. Black Panther trailer was another one. So I am totally, totally gamed. I know there's been some blowback, especially by people who are superhero tired. And especially when they did the whole thing going up to phase six. Tell your friends that are freaking out, do you read every single comic book that comes out? Hopefully they say, no. I don't even read comic books. That's not the right answer. But anyways, they're like that. You don't have to watch everything. Pick and choose what you like. Some people like Black Panther. Some people like Guardians. Not everything is a cup of tea. I think Doctor Strange failed because, as we talked about, they should have said this is more a horror movie, not a superhero movie, which is why it freaked everybody out when, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great. I watched Eternals. I watched Shang-Chi. I liked these shows. I haven't watched Ms. Marvel. I haven't watched Moon Knight. I haven't gone back and watched Scarlet Witch. I may never watch them, but they're there. And if you're like us who are geeks and you watch everything, by the time they get to Secret Invasion or they get to the Avengers Kang Dynasty, that is what the payoff is for those of us who invest into everything. And they can be accessed. Like when my wife watched Avengers with me, I kind of gave her a little heads up. She knew who everybody was. This one might be a little more difficult because they don't have the main guys. Or will they? Anyways, so that was fun stuff. My one San Diego Comic-Con buy, Corey, guess what it is?
I don't know.
Out of all the toys and all the comics, I went with the Hot Wheels Ghost Rider exclusive. And I fucked up. I ended up getting two by accident. But the one guy hasn't shipped it yet. Whereas the other guy who I bought it from, it's already in the mail. So when it gets here, if the other guy hasn't shipped yet, I'll just say, no, I'm canceling. Don't want it. Speaking of stuff I'm geeking on, I mentioned Orville. Oh, this the episode that hit as we're recording this podcast, which would have been Tuesday the 28th. Wow. Just wow. People watching the Orville are either one of two. They're either like, okay, this is Seth MacFarlane's version of Orville. It doesn't have the Family Guy type potty humor in it that the first two seasons had, or not as much humor, because that was stuff Fox wanted them to do. They wanted Family Guy in space. Now that he's not doing it, there's still humor, but he's doing some serious, serious episodes. And people are talking, and he's hearing it, because they had one on time travel that Seth said at Comic-Con. He said, yeah, we totally miss, to kind of give you the gist without giving away too much. A guy gets stranded back in the past. Orville time temporal laws are absolute. Do not mess with time. They're not feel good, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey like Star Trek. Oh, well, yeah, we're going to bring Gilliam to the future, take care of the world. Oh, we're going to leave this guy in the past because he's there. No, you don't do that in Orville. Something happened because when they found out that the crew member that got stranded in the past had a family, they had to go back to arrest him because that's not what you do. He's like, well, can't I bring my family forward? If they do, then Ed and Kelly, the captain and first officer, they get arrested for violating, as well as the character who got stranded. So they went back. And they, after 1 month of being there, picked him up so the timeline was set. And when they went and they explained to him, yeah, you had a family and all this other stuff that negated, which people were upset, like, oh, my God, how could you kill the children? Well, if they weren't supposed to exist, just a fun conversation. But then somebody pointed out, when you got the message that he was trapped in the past, it occurred 6 months after he arrived. If you went back in time to pick him up 1 month after he arrived, how did that message get to you? You just created the paradox you're trying to stop. And Seth acknowledged that and said, we had to go back and refilm something. So by the time this hits, I'm curious to see how they do that. More importantly, they sent an egg salad sandwich when they're playing around with time 3 months into the future. And that thing has yet to appear. I would love to see if, you know, all of a sudden this thing starts appearing, like the president of the union, who's played by Bruce Boxleitner in heavy makeup. He's sitting there all of a sudden. He sees an egg salad sandwich. I hate egg salad. Drops it in the garbage. Or like their arch enemies are sitting there, all of a sudden an egg salad just appears on top of them. Hell, I would love to see egg salad sandwiches start showing up in other franchises. I think that would be just brilliant. The third season of Orville is way different. Everybody's all kvetching about, oh my God, Disney hasn't said if they're going to renew it or not. Or Hulu. Well, two things have happened. First of all, it's going to move to Disney Plus. And second of all, people have very, very short-term memory. Seth said no decision is going to be announced until the final episode airs. So if you have,
I want to throw in one last thing. Other than the Orville, Seth MacFarlane's development deal is with Comcast to NBC. He may not be able to continue it. We don't know. The only reason that Family Guy and American Dad are still going is because he had a special carve out in those, and he doesn't directly work on them other than doing voices anymore.
And he may have that with Orville because this is his love affair to Star Trek. And some people are saying you're out Star Trekking Star Trek. So if you're all interested, Hulu's going to make their decision by the time his podcast airs, but you know, they're looking at how many times people view it. And that last episode, what a friggin' roller coaster. I mean, it was just, there was like only one time I was able to guess, oh, this is going to happen. most of the time I was just sitting back, and the effects are amazing. They're not just an hour or 40 minutes. It was like an hour and a half. We're getting mini movies every week. So I pray the Orville continues. I mentioned earlier, my wife is in Reno. She was going to go out to help my daughter move, but COVID hit. So she's out there having fun. And they actually went to their minor league ball team out there, which was kind of cool. And she's like, hey, this is kind of fun. Saints got a better stadium. And she was like, oh, well, Dana and I are going to go out to a little shopping in Dana. So you go into a comic store? And she sent me one of those gifts where the character is looking at me and go, really? I just sent her the Homer Simpson fading back into the bushes. Speaking of YouTube, I always talk about my buddy Jeff, cinemajudge.com, posted a couple interesting ones. He on the 17th, he posted about Ms. Marvel with interviews for Marvel Studios, Disney Plus streaming TV show, the cast. Matt Lintz, the laser, Sabrina Sheriff, interviews, movie clips, and then he put one up. Corey, what did you think if I told you there was a animated remake of Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles?
Who's involved in it?
Well, let's just say they took the script and they called it Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank. And it's got Mike Sierra, Samuel Jackson, Ricky Jarvis, Mel Brooks, George Takei, just a ton of episodes. This is one of those that I would never, ever, it's not even on my radar because it's animated. It's just not the thing I do. But what got Jeff's attention was that it was Richard Pryor's credits on who wrote it. And he's like, what? And they didn't advertise it as an animated Blazing Saddles, although the writers of the original film received screenplay credit. And it's already in and out of the theaters, and I think it's online. So if you're really interested, check out Paws of Fury, Legends of Hank. I'll probably be doing that whenever my next RDO rolls around.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see the Blazing Saddles TV series they filmed and never aired more than the pilot. They did 3 seasons of that show because there was a clause in the Blazing Saddles contract that they could not do a sequel without Mel Brooks unless they had done a TV show. So Warner Brothers actually filmed a TV show that never aired to fulfill that part of the contract so they could do a sequel without Mel Brooks. And then they never made the sequel.
Quack, quack. I think that's going to be it. I got more things to talk about, but most of it's stuff that, I've fallen down a YouTube vortex. If you ever follow my Facebook page, I'm always posting videos of trains. I just ran across people who build carts and ride abandoned rails. And a lot of it's out in the desert Southwest. It's a lot of fun. I was kind of heartbroken because there's one line, Eagle Mountain. Apparently, guys were riding it and they ran across some equipment. They're taking the rails down. And they're like, why are they doing this? Well, probably scrap metal. But it's really sad because it's a great way to see the country. And as I'm watching these guys scoot on their rails, I'm like, wow, this is an amazing area that they ran rails. And sometimes they were up into the 1980s, 1990s before they abandoned the rail line. They actually had one locally where the guys got and they rode the abandoned Ford plant line. It goes from almost downtown St. Paul to the Highland area. And that was kind of fun just because you're like, wait a minute. I know that. That's the Schmidt beer plant that they turned into condos that there's no way in hell I'll ever be able to afford. So anyways, that was just a lot of fun. I found some other interesting things, but I'll save it for next time. Corey, what you geeking on?
Now, the Ring of Honor pay-per-view that I covered on Saturday, utterly fantastic. But the thing that was the most fun, I was recording with Mike Johnson as we went over the show. And at the end, he said he got an email asking about his reaction to the Marvel movies and everything. And he talked about Star Wars. He said, oh, we're going to get the Beyonder and we're going to get Battle World. And I said, Mike, no. Look at the other stuff they're doing. This is the 2016 Secret Wars. And just his reaction of, first he was mad because he wanted the original Secret Wars, and then it was, oh, crap. I love other people's reactions like that. Because, they've already been hinting that that's what they're headed toward. You know, if you watch the movies and pay attention, they're heading toward the Secret Wars. Because in Multiverse of Madness, and the Spider-Man movie, they mention incursions. They don't drop stuff like that if they're not going to use it.
I'm curious, though, when you saw that, I didn't see anything on X-Men.
No.
I mean, I saw Fantastic Four, Phase 6, although I've been hearing they're going to drop them probably. I was real surprised by that.
You noticed there were a lot of blank spaces on that, too, though, didn't you?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure... Yeah. They're already talking. Well, whatever. I don't want to. I'm already geeking on it. That's all I can say.
There was one thing that came out after San Diego that got me geeking, and that is Jonathan Hickman has signed to do another series for Marvel. They're starting the teasers already.
Yay.
They've also announced in the previews that you're going to get in a week or so, Joe, there's a new Spider-Man series written by Dan Slott. I thought when they said, oh, it's the end of the Spider-Verse, it was just going to be a miniseries. Nope, it's a new series. Dan Slott has come back to Spider-Man. Still don't know who's taking over Fantastic Four, but Dan Slott is going to have his own Spider-Man book. And then the current team of Zeb Wells and John Romita Jr. are going to continue on Amazing Spider-Man. I did get Spider-Man number 900, which had a lead story by Zeb Wells and Ed McGuinness. Oh, it's a lot of fun. It's a new version of the Sinister Six, the Sinister Seven. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it was so much fun. One other thing about brand new comics is the new issue of Ant-Man. You know what they've brought back, Joe?
What's that?
See issue blah, blah, blah. And they're saying, you know, see issue blah, blah, blah. In Marvel Unlimited. So yes, they're going to be having the footnotes again because they can refer people to Marvel Unlimited, and it's a great sales tactic for Marvel Unlimited.
Well, and even for Marvel Comics, because that's, as a kid, that's what got me in as a collector. That's what got me going. It's like, oh, I got to go pick up this issue. Hell, there's even we didn't talk reviews, but I discovered somehow I missed the fact that in Swamp Thing number 84, Rick Veitch had a story about how Matthew became the Raven that we see in Sandman. And I'm like, I thought I was reading Rick Veitch at the time, but I don't remember this. So I'm like, not that it's helping DC, but I'm like, I got to go find that issue. So I love things like that. And even if you don't want to interrupt the comic, put it in the letters page, because it'll have, and if you don't want to refer to a book, that's also, buy the latest Marvel Tales or the latest Epic Collection, or go to Marvel Unlimited and look this up.
Yeah. So I hope it is the bringing back of those, because with Marvel Unlimited, you can actually read those old stories. I always loved it when Roy Thomas would put in, Mystic Comics number 3 from 1941. Roy, no one can afford that.
Or my favorite is like when Stan Lee, yeah, that was a mistake, so go pick up your mint copy of Fantastic Four number 5 and cross this panel out and write this.
And then as you've been going down the YouTube rabbit hole, I kind of went down a nostalgia rabbit hole. There was a mention online of those Mad, Signet, and then Warner Brothers paperback books. And I always liked those. Even as a kid, I preferred the paperback books to the magazine because, of course, the paperback books had so much more. And then there were the paperback books for the specific artists, you know, that weren't reprints from Mad Magazine. Sergio Aragonés had a few. Don Martin had a bunch of them, including the Captain Klutz book, which I absolutely loved. But it meant that I went on to eBay, and I bid on a bunch of lots, which were people who, I got 20 of these books, I'll sell them. I got 20 of these books, I'll sell them. And I've got one of those that I won that's coming to the house. But there was one that had five magazines, kind of. And it showed up today. And I am just geeking because it's stuff from the 80s that I had quit reading Mad. So it's new stuff that was edited by Al Feldstein and has all of the original, you know, the original Gang of Idiots. First one is Mad Disco, which was a special issue of Mad. It has a flexi disc in it, which is a, you know, just a, basically it's a 33 and a third record on the thinnest vinyl you can imagine. 30 minutes of disco tunes. They're all available on YouTube, by the way. All you need to do is go to the YouTube, put in Mad Disco, and you can get all four songs.
Because weren't you supposed to put a quarter on that so it wouldn't, like, it would actually turn on the turntable?
It doesn't say that, but usually you had to. But these are all stories, original stuff. It's not reprints about disco. It's all original stuff of them tying into the disco craze, including this wonderful Jack Davis. It's by Jack Davis and Dick DiBartolo. 60 minutes parody, 6 minutes looks at the disco business. Primo Jack Davis art. Mort Drucker art I've never seen. Don Martin stuff I've never seen. Sergio Aragonés stuff I've never seen. Ah, so good. Then a book that I had heard about, but I never saw, and it was called Mad 84. And it was a special issue of Mad. It was $2.50 at the time when Mad was $1.25, and it's the same size as their Mad Super Size, you know, the Mad Super Specials. So it's 84 pages, but it's all new material. And when I read up on it, it's basically stuff that got rejected, not because it was bad, but because the magazine was full. So they have, you know, about 3-4 years worth of stuff in the drawer, basically. They said, we'll put out an extra issue. Then, Joe, do you remember the big magazine-sized paperbacks they put out? Mad's vastly overrated Al Jaffe and the completely mad Don Martin, which are reprints of, you know, magazine articles, but, you know, bigger than the regular comic size. And it's really good spotlights on the stuff they did, all drawn by Don Martin or Al Jaffe. And then the last one is a super special I had as a kid, but the one I have now, because I had it as a kid, it's all beat to shit, is the Mad Super Special, The Comics, which was a 100-page special of all of their parodies of comic strips and comic books. Not when Mad was a comic book, but, you know, all of the stuff, like if comic characters were psychoanalyzed, or the magazine parody Comic Land, which was a scandal magazine about comic strips, or the, you probably remember this one, the Peanuts parody, Will Success Spoil Charlie Brown? Where, you know, Peanuts has become so popular that they're all rich and famous now and they're being jerks. The stuff by Wally Wood.
They're being jerks.
Let's see, what's this? This one is the Mad Comic Opera, which was a parody of comic strips as a musical, drawn by Wally Wood. Back, I think this one came out in like 58 or 59. This is such good stuff. I remember it as a kid. But now that I know so much more about the artists involved and the strips they were parodying, it's kind of like going to work on two levels. There's a nostalgia level, but there's also, oh, look at this beautiful Wallywood art. Oh, look at this wonderful art by Al Feldstein. Oh, here's early Sergio Aragonés. Oh, so I look at them in a different way. I'm just going to wallow in nostalgia for those this weekend reading those books. And it's fun because these are books that, you know, by the time they came out, I was too old for MAD. I had moved on to Marvel Comics, and MAD was kid stuff because MAD had a lot of jokes about school lunches and stuff like that. And now it's more, oh, I want to see that. I'll understand the references because I'm as old as they are. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Don't you have anything better to do? I mean, thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
I got some good news. The World Health Organization has announced that dogs cannot contract COVID. Dogs previously held in quarantine can now be released. To be clear, who let the dogs out?
Joe? I think you need to be careful if you're thinking of getting a rescue cat. Oh. My grandmother got one, and when she fell down and hurt herself, swear to God, the cat just sat there. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!